KPCW News Time now, 8:15. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday and dealt with a light agenda. In the studio with me, I have Councilmember Roger Armstrong to review some of the items discussed. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Leslie.
Perhaps most substantive was the TZO, Temporary Zoning Ordinance for grading. So have you personally had any phone calls or emails about this?
Kim Carson and I received some inquiries from some residents of North Summit County and asked us to come have a meeting about it. They were very concerned because in the agricultural world, when you start talking about moving dirt, that's pretty fundamental to what they do. And there's a carve-out, I believe, currently in our development code for agricultural operations from the requirement to get a grading permit. And somehow the breadth of that carve-out was not included in this proposed TZO. And as drafted, it would have meant, according to some of the residents there who haul dirt for a living and just regularly do so on their property, it would have amounted to about 3 dump trucks. And I think in Pat's presentation yesterday, he mentioned that it would be about 4 dump trucks of gravel. So it was meaningful for them, and they were very concerned that something was going to get passed without adequate conversation about how it would affect their livelihood.
We got 6 months to tweak it, right?
We didn't pass it. We put it off. We want to hear more from them. We were in the Richens building yesterday as opposed to Colville. So we pushed it off for at least a week to allow staff to go back and do a little bit more crafting on this, see if they can get it narrowed a bit, and then get some public comments so that we have a better understanding of how it's going to impact people.
Yeah. You heard from Gary Horton, who said right now under the current ordinance on county grading permits, no limit on how much you can move around. So do we need to limit that, do you think? Or?
You know, I think the purpose of this temporary zoning ordinance really arises out of a couple of incidents that we've had in the county where somebody came in to do and got a grading permit to do some work, and it did not receive adequate vetting by the planning department for whatever reason. Not because it was a requirement to do so, but because it just didn't happen. And so I think what they're trying to do is figure out a way to make sure that the pieces fit together. So if somebody wants to do extensive grading and it starts to look like development, it starts to go beyond the scope of what you would expect somebody to do with just a run-of-the-mill grading permit, the planning has a chance to look at it, make sure it conforms to zoning, and make sure it doesn't violate some other ordinance in the county.
Yeah. During public input, you heard from one person from a homeowners association worried that it would hamper their ability to do work on their private roads. So would that be a concern?
Yeah, again, there's a carve-out for that. So that's, I think, part of the narrowing that needs to be done on this to make sure that we're not exceeding the bounds and creating more problems than we're solving.
Okay. So again, another meeting in, when you meet at Colville and holding a public hearing then as well?
Absolutely, yeah. The public will hear about it.
All right. Council approved the refinancing of the up to $12 million bond in part to finish the Camas Library building. So talk to me a little bit about that project. Is it behind schedule?
I think it has been. Tom Fisher said yesterday that it has been delayed, you know, as other projects around Summit County by the volume of snow that we've had this winter. So it's been pushed back a little bit, but it looks like we should be ready to go, according to Tom, sometime this fall.
Yeah, and still on budget?
I certainly hope so.
Okay.
We didn't get a briefing on that.
All right. So the money is basically the bulk of the money is to refinance an existing bond, and then this Camas bond, building bond, is being kind of thrown in with that.
Exactly. We were able to take advantage of slightly more favorable market conditions with respect to the existing bond, and in refunding that bond, there's some room in there based on our borrowing capacity to include funds for the Camas building and also for the landfill.
The Ranger Robotics team made a presentation on the new leash law campaign. Related to that, you were concerned about the dog issue from a few years back. So do you think we're on top of that at this point?
The third rail of politics in Park City and Summit County. No, I think things are working pretty well right now. I think we've always got to be concerned. We've increased, between Park City and Summit County, we've increased substantially the amount of off-leash areas that are available. We've seen some reports from Bob Radke and some of the trails guys at Snyderville Basin Rec that people maybe aren't being as responsible as they could be in terms of picking up after themselves in some of those areas. I think we're still seeing some conflicts between people with off-leash dogs and others in areas that are not designed to be off-leash. And, you know, these kids came up with this idea. They're concerned for whatever reason, and they came up with the idea. Their logo is terrific. Whoever designed it for them did a great job. And they came up with a good plan. So, you know, I think we like to encourage civic involvement in our young kids, and these guys stepped up. So
what is the campaign, and what are they going to do?
The campaign is essentially a campaign to hand out leashes. It's, I think, a continuation of a campaign that they ran, I believe, from 2003 or 2002 to 2011, where they handed out leashes to people that had off-leash dogs and just ran campaigns with signs and stickers and buttons to encourage people to leash up when you're in areas that are not off-leash.
So regarding of the problem of people not picking up after their pets, does that jeopardize the, you know, free dog areas? I mean, at some point, do people need to be penalized somehow, or what?
I don't know the answer. I mean, I think people need to be made responsible. You know, we've heard some of the trails folks talking about holding your fellow resident accountable if you see somebody walking away saying something. And, you know, we've all got some responsibility to help pick up. If we're walking by somebody else's bag that they've left on the side of the trail, it's really not much for us to pick that up and carry it to a receptacle. So I think we've all got to just work together to make this a viable program. Park City and Summit County stepped up to accommodate the demands of the community, and we would hope that the community will be responsible the way they enjoy that.
I had a woman email me telling me that she had picked up 32 bags of poop from out at Willow Creek. I mean, and this was like from the car to the trash can.
I don't know what people are thinking about when, you know, when they go out and they just leave it. It's, you know, we talk about the poop fairy and we joke about it, but nobody's picking it up. And the people that, worse are the people that, you know, don't bag it in the first place, because that endangers the watershed and other things in the community. So, again, I think it's about responsibility.
All right. An issue that was discussed last week, and I know that you're somebody who's very involved in this, but let's talk a little bit about e-bikes. You feel that an ordinance that the county does should not replicate Park City's e-bike law. How come?
I had a chance to talk to a couple of representatives from Park City about this as well. I think the problem is that if you start with the goal, our goal is how can we get people to get out of their cars? And I think bicycles, and especially electric bicycles, are a way to do that. It's one way. If we're going to do that, I think we have to encourage broad participation. And so if we're going to say, if you've got a bike of a certain power level, I mean, assuming it's still an e-bike and it's not a moped or something that doesn't belong on trails, if we say you can't have one that doesn't have a governor at 20 miles an hour, it feels like it's overbroad. If we've got a speed limit on the trails already, it would be equivalent of saying you can't drive a Ferrari on MARSAC because it's got a 40-mile-an-hour speed limit, but you can drive a Chevy. There's still a 40-mile-an-hour speed limit. I'm not sure how we enforce the power ratings on a bicycle that's going by you. Do we pull somebody over? Do you only enforce it if there's an accident? I think people in this community are probably likely to buy a more powerful bike if they can. So we take all of those people off of the paved trails. With respect to single track, you know, I don't have a problem with Park City's position on that. And I think as I talked it through with some of their representatives, they were at least amenable to having the conversation. So I do think we have to square up our ordinances, because I don't think we should govern one way in the basin and another way in Park City. I think we probably have more affected trails in the basin than in Park City. I think there are more paved kinds of trails that will be affected by this in the basin than there are in Park City. So again, I think it's just squaring it up, and I think we'll get there.
Yeah. So how do you feel about the speed limit of 14 and a half?
It's an unusual speed limit. When we asked Bob Radke about it, he said, you know, it was something that catches your eye, the 0.5, and makes people at least think about it. I think it's fine. I think it's, we're going to, if we have the level of use that we hope, we're going to have a lot of people mingling on the trails. We're going to have people in bikes and other means of transportation. So I think, you know, it's a good thing to have some sort of safety measures in place and to make people conscious about their behavior on the trails. And again, we all have to to move around the basin and Park City together. So let's be kind to each other and do it efficiently.
Yeah. So do we need to share the trails, or are we going to start striping our trails just so that we know, you know, pedestrians one side, bikes the other? Or
it's a great question. I don't know the answer to it. I think part of that will grow out of the use that we see. Some of the, you know, I know you ride an electric bicycle, and as we ride, you know, I think we see some of the challenges of some of the trails that we ride on. Some may be a little bit narrow right now. We may at some point have to consider widening some of our trails to accommodate it better. If you see what they've done in Southern California and Santa Monica, you can ride from Santa Monica all the way down to Redondo Beach on a bike path. And as you know, it's separated into two sides. You've got walkers, you've got bikes, skaters, you've got a variety of people that use that path in a very friendly manner, in a cooperative manner. So I think ultimately, if this works well, we're going to have to take a look at our infrastructure and determine whether we need to adjust it a bit to make it work.
All right. And then right now, electric bikes are not allowed on our soft surface and mountain trails unless you have a disability. At what point do my old knees become a disability?
It's a great question. I don't know the answer. I think, again, we've got to think about when people are, I guess, unable to do the things that they were formerly able to do, or that most people that are able-bodied are able to do. That's generally the standard. With reasonable accommodation is how the federal government would look at it under the ADA. So I'm sure we'll be having those discussions, because there are a lot of us in this community with old knees that are going to get there.
Yeah. Anything else you wanted to mention, Ron?
I don't think so. You and I were talking earlier. It really pains me to hear about what happened at Javakal yesterday, and I hope that the Park City Police Department tracks down those people responsible. And again, we live in a community, I think, where we value everybody, and we need to act accordingly.
All right. Roger Armstrong, Summit County Council member. Thanks.
Thanks.
The Park City Planning Commission met last night and heard from the Treasure Hill developers about their plans to park guests, visitors, and to make room for delivery and emergency vehicles. In the studio with me, I have Commission Chairman Adam Strong. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning.
So what was your impression of the parking plan?
Pretty vague at this point. We basically had a table with some parking stall numbers identified. Staff has one number, which is 366. The applicant has another number, which is 424. So there's a discrepancy there, not a lot of discussion on why that discrepancy exists from the applicant. The applicant's only explanation was, well, we need some room for visitor and employee parking, but we still don't have any answers as to what the use of the commercial space is going to be, and so we don't have any idea of how many visitors may actually be going and using the project. So a little underwhelmed last night, but I think we'll get there. I hope so.
Yeah, so it's important to know how the commercial space is going to be used, because there's different calculations for parking?
Well, yeah, but there's even a step before that. We need to know what the use of the commercial space is, and in fact, we need to know what the ownership format's going to be, condominiums, timeshares, primary residence, that type of thing. Because that, of course, drives, excuse me, not only the parking, but it drives how much traffic goes in and out of there. So if you have a very intensive commercial use, you're going to have more traffic and you're going to need more parking spaces. Whereas if you have a more less intensive commercial use, then you would presumably not need as many parking spaces and not have the traffic needs. So we don't have any of that information yet.
Okay. And in terms of just how it flows, does that seem to work well? It looks like they've got traffic circles on every level of parking.
Yeah, you know, I think the flow of it isn't really in question, but I do think that Commissioner Doug Timm's comments about the potential inefficiency arising from the size of the stalls is a valid question. You know, Commissioner Timm has done a number of projects, very large, and understands very well what you need in a parking garage. And you don't necessarily need as big a stalls as the Treasure people are proposing, and or at least Commissioner Tim is asking why they need such large stalls. If they've got some justification for it, fine, but we haven't heard that yet.
Because people still drive Suburbans and the such?
No, I mean, or it's just a square footage grab. And I think that's the question. And so I think Commissioner Tim and myself and the others are going to be looking pretty closely at that.
All right. What about emergency vehicles? You feeling okay in terms of ingress, egress?
Yeah, you know, we're going to hear from the fire chief, and I expect the fire chief will tip his hat to that. I think he's going to be fine with it because they've worked together so far in formulating the plan. So I do, however, think that while the emergency vehicles may circulate okay in the project itself, once they get onto Empire Lowell, there are some very different and difficult questions. Because those are choke point streets.
And then in terms of deliveries, again, this is, seems like it will work as proposed?
Well, that's the problem. As proposed is not exactly clear. We've got some statements by the applicant that all the deliveries will take place underground and will take place, you know, in the mornings. But where those deliveries take place, how many trucks are going to be making those deliveries, at what intervals, during what time frames, none of that has been specified. And again, it's because we don't really know the true shape of the support commercial.
All right. And then in terms of the parking, I mean, this is all underground, and this is the reason for the excavation that we've been talking about before?
Well, it's one of the reasons, and it's one of the bigger reasons for the excavation. And, of course, that excavation, as the Thinks lawyer pointed out, Ms. DeForge, you're kind of squeezing a balloon there because you've got one impact of parking mitigation. You know, you need to mitigate the impact of all the parking you're going to need. But in order to mitigate that, you've got to excavate more, so you're exacerbating another impact. And there is a balance there. I mean, these guys have vested units. You know, that decision was made in 1985. And they've got assigned parking. You know, they've got vested parking. And so the question is how to put that in a place where we're going to minimize the excavation and keep our eye on whether the traffic impacts require further reduction in the size.
All right. Treasurer says they've been working with staff to create an agenda and a timeline going forward, and they hope to ask for a decision late summer, early fall. At this point, how likely is that?
Well, that was news to me. They said they had submitted an agenda. I haven't seen that yet, but I asked the applicant last night, and they want to request a decision in August and have us make a decision by September or October. As I've said here before, they always have that option of, you know, quote unquote, pulling the ripcord and forcing us to make a decision. And maybe that's what they're going to do. Whether all the evidence is in by that point, I don't know. But if that's their plan, I appreciate them letting us know that because, then we're not surprised when they pull the ripcord out of nowhere.
Yeah. So you plan to stay on at least through a decision?
I don't know. I really don't. It's been 10 years, and my two kids wonder where I am on Wednesday nights. And I may stick it out, but I may wait out until this July or August. And these planning committees, I stayed on because the planning commission was new. And the city council thought they could use some of the help and his institutional knowledge. But these commissioners now are more than up to speed, more than competent. They don't need me anymore. And so I may spend those Wednesday nights with my kids instead.
All right. Moving on, the yard plat amendment, not really any issues here. I mean, the applicant, we should mention, though, is Park City Municipal. You had mentioned that you appreciate that the temporary solutions to solve problems you appreciate their temporary solutions to solve problems and that more of that's going to be needed for Bonanza. Could you be a little bit more specific about that?
Yeah, the Bonanza Park area has been identified as one that is going to undergo some significant changes over the next, 5 to 10 years. There are lot lines all over that place. There are different owners, and there is a lot of construction that needs to be done if that place is going to be upgraded. That won't be easy to do. I mean, nothing is easy in this town to do, especially on that scale. So coming up with, temporary solutions and ways to be creative in solving problems is going to be essential. And I think the city and Mark Fisher and Rory Murphy, to their credit, did so in this instance.
Okay. Planning Commission was just looking at that plat amendment. You haven't seen any plans for the future development on the city's parcel?
I haven't yet, but my understanding is they intend to put some housing there, affordable housing, and maybe some support transit. But I don't think that those plans are even close to finalized yet. But that's just my personal understanding.
All right. And then any news on the Park City Heights MPD?
Not really. Their design guidelines were ratified last night. To my utter dismay, there will be more bulldozers and suburban sprawl happening this summer. But that is the reality we live in. And so I will turn my head as I turn toward Round Valley on my bike.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the bus through your neighborhood?
Sure. I'll be frank. It's a terrible, terrible idea. And, that thing is careening down my street at 30 plus miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour speed zone. And all of the neighbors that I've talked to don't like it. It is overlapping with the yellow line, which already serves the area, and I think adequately. The only question is that the yellow line doesn't go up to PCMR, but to me, that is a simple change of making the yellow line go through PCMR. Or you could alternatively put the red line and have it just go down Comstock to Kearns to Sidewinder and not through a residential street where my kids like to ride their bikes and otherwise live their lives without a bus staring them down. So, it was just a terrible idea, and it's a pilot program. And I've spoken with Andy Bierman, and we're going to try to get it overturned. I hope they listen to us, because pilot programs are supposed to reflect what the realities are for the people that live around them. And the realities are very, very bad.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, in terms of that, how that happens. I mean, I don't know if it's a council decision, but perhaps they hold some kind of hearing or input session on it?
Well, the way it happened this last time was that the transportation guy, not Alfred Knotts, but Fossenbach, I think is his name, just unilaterally made the decision based on, they had a neighborhood meeting, he just did it. And, and if you're going to run a bus down the Annie Oakley street, you better have all the Annie Oakley neighbors there asking them what they think. And, I knew about the meeting, but, you can't make everything. This town's, I could go to a meeting every minute if I had to. But so I missed that meeting, maybe shouldn't have, but hoping to turn that around in the next week or so, because it really is just terrible.
All right. Well, I think it goes through ski season ends, right?
Yeah. Although my fear is that, with the way the town is growing and the number of skier days that we're seeing, the increases in that, the pressure is going to be on the city to keep that moving more than just the ski season. I mean, the summer months are almost as busy as the winter now. So what I am hoping, and I hope the city and the transportation department is listening very carefully, is that that was not a pilot program to expand into the summer months. That wasn't what was represented to us. And if that's the underlying agenda, then that's even more concerning.
Okay. Adam, thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Park City Planning Commission Chairman Adam Strong. Well, now through April 16th, the Kimball Arts Center presenting the exhibit Groundbreaking. In the studio with details, I have Exhibition Director Nancy Stoke, along with Education Director Amy McDonald, and on the phone with us, one of the artists whose work is being featured in the exhibit, Lauren Gillespie. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Okay, let's get those mics up here. First, maybe Nancy, you want to tell us a little bit about the exhibit?
Absolutely. It's an exhibition of contemporary ceramics, really looking at how artists are really pushing the boundaries of clay and doing things that you don't expect out of the medium. So there's all sorts of work from pieces are based on vessels to pieces that are more figurative, but really looking at innovation in form and surface.
So not just coffee mugs and bowls.
Exactly.
Okay. Lauren, tell us about your pieces. How many do you have in the exhibit?
I have four works in the exhibition, and they cover a range of bodies of work. They're from a period of time of my work, and they're all small to medium-scaled porcelain sculptures with intricately painted surfaces that usually depict some combination of human figures and abstract patterns. And essentially, they're all about the notion of the body. I'm really interested in ceramics in part because of the idea of the metaphor of the vessel and the pot as a metaphor for the body that runs through the whole of ceramic history. But I want to use that to create more innovative sculptures that engage with that notion of embodiment.
And I guess that's the beauty of clay, that it's not really just the structure of it. It's how it gets glazed and fired, huh?
Yes, it's a really intricate and long process with lots of risk-taking and a high likelihood of failure in general. I used to call the beginning ceramics class that I taught Failure 101 because you just, in some ways, in order to understand the material, you have to be willing to risk it by putting it through all these processes.
Okay, so these sound like they're all done by hand, huh?
Yes, they're all hand-built. I use a method called coil building and slab building. And once they're constructed, then, as you mentioned, they're glazed. They go through a firing in a kiln where they're covered in something that turns into melted glass. And then often what I'll do is I'll work into the surface or on top of the surface with something called China paint and refire that same piece sometimes up to 20 times in order to get a really dense layered surface.
So when you talk about that coil build, I think of some of my daughter's very, you know, beginning ceramic projects. So I guess that's just like one of the basic building blocks of what you do, huh?
Exactly. I mean, in some ways, ceramics is the oldest art form in the world. And in some ways, the processes are just the same as the most primitive works of art that we still have in existence. You're always starting with basic fundamentals of building, and then you're pushing the boundaries of what you can do with it, which I think is a beautiful, this exhibition is a beautiful example of that.
Okay. And then, Amy, in terms of course, we've got a ceramic studio, which we invite kids to use all the time.
Yes, we do. And let me just sort of broaden the conversation. Groundbreaking came about after a long evolution where we realized we have this really talented makers community. And our Kimball Clay Ceramic Studio is this thriving hub of activity. And we thought, why not bring in the best of the best to our community to show what is being innovated in ceramics and then have that dovetail with our local makers community. And so this is the first time ever that the Kimball Art Center has an exhibit completely dedicated to ceramics. So it's incredibly exciting. And when you come in, we have 12 of the best of the best artists exhibited. And then two of our artists, Lauren being one of them, are going to be offering workshops for the community to learn about their techniques and styles and ideas. In addition, we have art talks scheduled, and Nancy can speak to that more. But I think it's the really important piece here is that our local makers have this tremendous opportunity to interface with state-of-the-art makers.
So this workshop then would be for professional or people, artists
anyone.
Who do clay?
Oh, anyone.
All levels.
All levels are welcome.
Oh.
And so, yes, at our Kimball Clay Studio, as you mentioned, we offer a wide range of classes, and we also have open studios for independent artists that want to come in and make. So you can look at our website on social media and all of that for information about open studio hours, for classes. So we have a pretty exciting lineup.
Can you give us the date and time of the workshops, though?
Absolutely. So Lauren will be coming in for an art talk on the evening of March 31st and then doing a fantastic workshop on April 1st. And Giselle Hicks will be coming the following weekend doing an art talk on the evening of April 7th at 6 p.m. And then a workshop on April 8th.
All right. And then the workshop's just happening in the Kimball Clay Studio.
Kimball Clay, yep.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Other than just kind of reinforcing that, please come and see the exhibit and come see our offerings because we have, like I say, 12 artists who have either won Emerging Artist of the Year awards or Outstanding Established Artists. And it's very rare that you get 12 such artists in one place at one time and get to see such phenomenal works of art. So we really invite you to stop by.
Okay. Amy, Nancy and Lauren, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you. KPCW News Time now, 8:51. Good morning. Well, for our youth sports report this month, in the studio I have Mike Adamick. He's the new director of the Park City Ice Miners, along with Andrew Pedersen. He plays goalie for the Ice Miners as well as the Park City High School. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Mike, is this a new position? Are you replacing somebody?
Yeah, it's I'm replacing Aaron Dufford, who was our former hockey director and actually our high school coach as well. Aaron is kind of switching careers. Him and I, you know, are good buddies from past hockey exploits. And after an interview process and a job search, I got his job.
Great.
So I'm his replacement.
Yeah, so you serve as kind of director of the team and head coach?
So we have 11 teams in our program. It's mites, which is 8 and under, to midgets, which is 18 and under. So we kind of run the whole gamut. I'm the hockey director for all those teams. I coach one team, which was this past year was the 18 and under team. Next year I'll be the 16 and under coach. We have coaches that coach multiple teams in our program. Obviously it's not a huge hockey community, so a couple of our coaches also coach with the high school team as well. I was the high school assistant coach this past year. So
how many kids do we have playing hockey?
We have over 200 here in Park City playing, which is pretty awesome for how big of a town we have.
Yeah, so boys and girls?
Boys and girls.
Do they play on the same team or are they separated?
Yes, up until about 12 years old, they play on the same team. And then when they start hitting puberty, we kind of separate them a little bit. We do have a girls 12 and under team in our program this year. We do have a couple girls playing JV high school, that kind of stuff too.
All right. So at the high school then, Andrew, we have both a boys and girls hockey team,
yes,
huh?
Yes, we do.
All right. And you play goalie then for what is
the U16 team.
And that's for Park City High School or that's for the
That's for the travel team. And I also play for varsity Park City High School.
Ah, okay. So
it's kind of a lot of the kids play that are on our travel team do play high school as well. Our travel teams are for a little bit more competition for those kids. We go to out-of-state tournaments and kind of play in front of, you know, scouts and stuff that they want to get noticed in. The high school team is a lot more local.
All right. So the Ice Miners travel team is kind of a club sport then?
Correct.
Is that...
Yeah. Correct.
And I guess at the high school, it's also a club sport in that sense.
Yes,
that you
because
don't...
it's not affiliated with the high school yet.
But you only play locally then?
Correct.
I mean, what
yep.
are some of the teams you play with
like
the high school
Viewmont,
level?
Like Viewmont, Murray, Corner Canyon... those teams, just other high school teams.
Yeah. So how did you get involved in playing hockey?
Well, hockey, my parents took me out when I was really young, just started skating, and then I got into goalie when my brother strapped on these old pads on me, and then I just fell in love with the position.
It's usually how it goes for goalies. Their older brother or sister makes them sit in the net while they shoot at them. That's how Andrew fell in love with goaltending.
Yeah, I don't know. What's there to love about it? Yeah.
Just got to make sure you got the good pads on and tell your brother not to shoot too high.
Yeah. All right, so how are the teams doing then? Let's maybe just start with the high school, Andrew.
We lost. We came in second in states this year. We lost to Murray 3-2 in the championship game. And then we just had our U16 state championship game. We lost to, they're called the Eagles. We lost to them 3-2 also.
So tough losses.
Yep.
Yeah, what did you learn from that?
Keep grinding. Don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
And our program suffered 4 one-goal losses in state finals this past year, so...
Well,
lots
that,
of close calls.
Yeah, so the fact that we're making it into the championship round is a good sign for
a
program that's pretty new.
Yeah, our program's only about 7 or 8 years old. We're definitely making huge strides, super competitive locally in the state. And when we go out of state, we're starting to be even more competitive as well. It's hockey's not a huge thing in Utah, but it's definitely getting bigger, and our program's kind of leading the way, I think.
Yeah. So is the get out and play, does that introduce kids to hockey?
Yeah, for sure. It's a good way. I mean, obviously, in a small town, you want to keep growing the sport from younger groups up. And that gives our, you know, younger kids a chance to figure out hockey and see if they like it. And we usually have a couple kids every year from that end up playing in the long run, you know.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about?
Get out and try it. It's really fun. I love hockey.
Okay. Hey, Andrew and Mike, thanks for coming by.